All right, welcome back to the Dadpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Alex. And today we have a guest that's going to be talking to us about a topic that is really tough. It's a thorn on every entrepreneur's back. And I'll just start out saying that I myself, early in my journey, I've shared this on the podcast here before with you all, that I struggled with finances. It didn't matter how much I was growing. I just didn't seem to want to pay attention to the balance sheet, the income statements, all that stuff. I would leave it to the accountant, the bookkeeper, and say, look, we're growing, right? We're scaling. We have more sales, more stores. And really when 2009 rolled around, 2008, 09, in that financial crash, it was very telling that, you know, we had been mismanaging the finances as much as it was, I wasn't minding it. And ever since then, I made it my business to really understand the financial side of any business. I started serving on boards and really geeking out on financial statements. And it became one of those things that was like, if I can understand the financial statements, I can understand the company, the business model, then I can really feel that confidence that we're doing everything we can. So, without further ado, I want to welcome our guest, Krista McClellan, to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Alex. And yeah, you're not alone. Most of the business owners I work with, really, they're great at what they do, but they don't pay attention to those financials because they leave it to their CPA. And I'm working with somebody right now, and their CPA has told them all year long, don't worry about it. You know, I'm handling that. You just go make the money. And I was, you know, this is someone I actually went to high school with, and we just recently reconnected through my business. And I was like, don't worry about it. Like, red flag.
Yeah, you have to worry about it. So take us back to, you know, why you got into the financial side of, you know, business and bookkeeping, helping business owners. Why did you get into it?
So here I am, like I help people, I call it getting comfy with the F word, finances, right? Because it is that F word. We're more apt to actually drop the F bomb than talk about the F word. And I was one of those people. And here, you know, today it's kind of funny that I talk to people about it, but I do it because I learned the hard way.
Okay. So,
a long time ago, galaxy far, far away, I was a stay-at-home mom. And I gave up all of my financial power to my husband because I was raised that he was the head of the household. He was the breadwinner. You know, he handled the money. And I always thought I wasn't good at math. I'm not good at this. Like, let him do it. Unfortunately, he got sick and we did lose him to cancer. And suddenly I was faced with being a single mom and I had no clue how to handle my money. I had to learn quickly. And you know, he was a firefighter. Firefighters don't get life insurance. And in our tiny town, firefighters don't pay into Social Security because we're not part of the union. We're too small. So there was really nothing for me and my children. I had no idea how to even pay my mortgage or the electric bill. He did it all. So I had my head in the sand and learning how to handle the money, learning how to dig ourselves. We were in debt. I was hiding my car in the garage from the repo man. I had little kids. And so I had to decide, was I going to figure it out or was I going to give up? And I had the discussion with my kids. We don't have to struggle. We could give up our home. We could move in with Nana. And we could do that. And they wanted to stay in our home. They wanted to stay in the town. And I said, okay, that means we're going to have to make some sacrifices. That means we have to figure stuff out together. And I made them part of that journey. And we figured out not just how to dig out of debt, not just how to survive, but how to thrive. It wasn't a straight, easy road. You know, there was, I think, the one big day that stands out to me is, you know, here I am. I had involved the children in how much I make and how much things cost so that they could understand. I wasn't saying no to be mean. I was saying no because we didn't have it. And we made the choice to stay in our home. Mm-hmm. And if any time they wanted to change that choice, we could. But my decisions just didn't impact me. So I had them in on the decision making. And I live in New England. I'm in New Hampshire. It gets cold. It gets icy. So here I was right before Christmas. It was like 3 days before, so right about now, 3 days before Christmas. And, you know, I needed oil in my tank so that the pipes didn't freeze, but I also needed tires because we were spinning out on the ice and I couldn't afford both. I was trying to figure out where it was going to come from. And it was a really tough decision. Like, do I keep us warm and make it so the pipes don't freeze, or do I make it my kids safe on the road? And it was the worst feeling in the world that I couldn't provide. And my children came up to me. They had gotten gift cards from their dad's fire department because there were no presents under the tree for us. That was something we gave up, and they got gift cards. They handed me their gift cards and said they wanted tires for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Gut punch. Now, proud moment as a mom that my kids wanted, they were selfless enough at 9 and 12. They were selfless enough to give up the idea of going shopping for stuff. Because again, no presents, but they knew the value of having tires. Proud moment. But also, I felt like the worst mother in the world that I put us in that position. And I felt like Scarlett O'Hara, the never to report again. I was never going to be in this position again with them. And I dug in and I learned about cash flow, and I dug in. And we gamified it. We gamified getting out of debt. We gamified making money and saving money. And they're now 20 and 23. They both live on their own. They are fully self-sustaining adults, and we are thriving. It's very strange to not have them in my house now, but you know, the fact that they could at 20 and 23, when I see so many other kids still at home, like, we did it. And if I can do it, me, the person who, like, my kids had to teach me how to use the computer. If I can do it, I can help other people do it. And so it's my passion. And it got me into bookkeeping and helping businesses. And you geek out on it. I call myself a QuickBooks geek. I absolutely love to make it so it doesn't suck.
Absolutely. I mean, hard story to hear. But I know many listeners, and I can say myself included, you know, and the collapse of 08, at the time, my wife and I, we didn't have kids. It wasn't until about 2010. Today we have four kids. And I think of, like, you know, my risk tolerance then, Krista, I've talked about it here with our listeners. My risk tolerance early on in my entrepreneurial journey was high. I mean, invest here, there, the other, but, I wasn't as fiscally responsible, and it wasn't because I was spending crazy money. So I wasn't living like a lavish life, which is typically what people do if they're coming into a lot of money. You know, like, my first business within the first 2 years was already doing over $1 million in revenue, and it was just growing. And I got lucky in a lot of ways, you know, but I didn't know how to keep it and manage it, right? And it really was that 08, 09 period of my life really helped me get my financial life in order. And I said, well, now that we're going to have kids, I can't let that happen. And so I can only imagine the things that my wife and I went through at that time, had we had kids, a lot like yourself, making those tough decisions and then having the proud moment, but on the same token, the realization that, like, oh my God, how did I get myself into that? But I want to kind of dial into what you talked about at the beginning, which was the fact that you were not as involved, or very little involvement in the decisions. And again, I'm not here to give, you know, this is not couples therapy, but I find that that level of communication between two partners is, and transparency, right? Communication, transparency of, like, here's what's going on, regardless of who makes what, right? It is, I think, what can give you the most security so that both people have no blinders on. So my wife and I, we go through this on a weekly basis, right? She understands exactly what's going on with the businesses. She's involved in the businesses to begin with. So that makes it easier. So I imagine that for people who have two different jobs, makes it a little bit harder because you'd rather watch some Netflix than go talk about the finances. But tell me, what advice would you give? Because you went down that road. What would you have done different in terms of not the business side, but the household side, to between you and your husband?
I wish, and I do this now, I am currently remarried and my current husband has come kicking and screaming into dealing with money because he had always given it up to his ex-wife. He thinks he's not good at it. And I said, well, this is a team, you know, I'm not making decisions for you. We make team decisions and you need to know the lay of the land. And Clee goes, well, it's your business. Nope. It's my business. My name is on it. However, it's our life. And so we have monthly, not weekly, because he's not excited about weekly. But we do have monthly meetings. And he didn't know, like he didn't understand the whole idea of a budget. And so I showed him like, we have a game plan of where our money is going to go. Money and time should be spent on paper first. Give your money a job because otherwise it slips through your fingers and it's gone and you're wondering where it's left. Right. So, okay, we're going to say this is historically how much we've made. This is historically how much our expenses are. You need to know if something happens to me, how to log in and make these payments. Mm-hmm. Right. Knowing that it's not my login with my password, it's ours. Right. I couldn't make a payment on my mortgage because it was my husband's login tied to his email that the PIN went to his cell phone. I had no access to. Never occurred to me I needed it. So having it be something that is shared information. I didn't even know how to make my mortgage payment. I didn't know how much my mortgage was. So knowing what the family income is, knowing what the family expenses are, how to make those payments. I'm dealing with one of my clients right now is in the ICU and his wife is working with me. She's kept her head in the sand the whole time too. I've tried to have him share it over the years, given him my tale. And now, unfortunately, he's in a coma, has been for about 3 weeks. And his wife is now working with me about, okay, how do I pay this for his business? How do I get money out to pay our bills at home? How do I do this? Mm-hmm. Having those discussions. There's always one person in the couple that is the doer, right? Right. They like it more than the other.
Absolutely.
There's also a saver and a spender, right? But we balance each other out. And having those discussions about how to spend your money intentionally, whether it's, okay, we're going to have this much left over. How do we want to save for a vacation? Do we want to put it into our retirement? What do we want to do as opposed to just it not doing anything? Or one person's made the decision and the other person now might resent it. You know, empower your partner. I learned the hard way that, you know, life does not, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. And I know I was uncomfortable asking for the information. I felt like it made it seem like I didn't trust him. That was my own interpretation in my head that it felt like I was telling him I didn't trust him. But the reality is in today's world, we need both people to be on the same page, at least in the same book. There are people that aren't even in the same book with what their future wishes are with money and life. Have those discussions. You know, my husband and I, every New Year's, we go away and we now plan our next year. We have a meeting about the next year and our plans for our family. What do we want to do as a couple? What are the things how are we going to work that in financially? Can we afford this, that, or the other thing? How are we going to make, we had to get a new subject. How are we going to make that happen? And now he doesn't hate or feel like he can't talk about money he used to be embarrassed or feel like he didn't know, or it was just an uncomfortable conversation. Now he's not afraid of having those conversations with me. He feels good about having those conversations and asking the questions. It bonds, it's bonding. It doesn't have to be a war. It can be very bonding. And many people grew up with it being a fight in the family, which is why they don't do it. And if
I think so.
The point that it's not a fight, wouldn't it be better?
Yes, I agree with you. It's the way you were raised. And I think culturally and just societal, I mean, we're in a different place now where you have so many organizations and, you know, TV shows, podcasts, books. I mean, you've got an abundance of tools that are free, many that are free, to teach you financial literacy. So it starts early. But even if you didn't start early and you're in a relationship as an adult, I think it's so important. You know, I've taken on different partners over the years in different business ventures. And the thing that I spend the most time on in the beginning, other than getting to know them, making sure that we mesh well together, and I talk about that here on the podcast, is let's talk about the finances. Like, I have to be transparent with you, right? It's not just a credit report or anything like that. It's a really, here's where I am in this business, these are my commitments, my responsibilities. Therefore, this is why I can invest this much time and money into this venture that we're going to do together. Okay, your turn. Now tell me about your, like, when do you want to take the money out, the profits, this, that, and the other? And what happens there in those conversations, Krista, I have found that it's, you really learn where people are in their financial literacy. And it doesn't have to be embarrassing because, as I said, at one point, I was also head in the sand in that way, just like, hey, you know what? The business is growing. It's okay. Leave it to the accountant, you know? And so, again, it's just something that you have to talk about. So whether it's a partner in the business, whether it's a partner, your husband, wife, I mean, you know, you just got to get down to talking about it. And as I mentioned here in the podcast, we've had other experts, whether they're fiduciary, like I'm a big fan of financial advisors that are fiduciaries because they're just charging you for the real advice and their expertise. They're not making money like a stockbroker on a percentage of what they advise you on, right? And so I love fiduciaries in that way because they can put together a plan. You can go or forward with it or not, but it's based on, you know, some real less risky options, because there's so many risky options there from out there, from, you know, cryptocurrency to a ton of different scams that we all see online. And so it's harder to keep your money as an entrepreneur, which is why we wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think so many entrepreneurs, they lean in on their CPA and it's a once a year thing, especially if they're solopreneurs. I find, obviously, if they're companies with, you know, 5, 10, 100 employees, it's different. They typically have a CFO and the right organizational structure. So, you know, it should be noted that I'm really talking to our solopreneurs who are, you know, in their little box and they're not sharing it with anyone else. So for you, you know, for those that are listening and are thinking, boy, I'm that person, right, who I just lean on the CPA. And what do you think is the risk? And the risk of things going south, one, but also, do you think that it prevents you from growing? Because if you're not as into the numbers and everything that's going in and out, how can you know if you're able to grow or not?
How do you know how to charge? I was just dealing with this with someone. They came to me, their CPA referred me because their CPA does their taxes. That's all, right? So she's like, no, you need a bookkeeper. So they came to me and his biggest thing was, right, hey, I made $1 million in sales. Where's my money? Like, why did I just had $1 million.
Typical story.
And so I said, okay, right. I see it all the time. They're like, oh, great. So we focus on the sale. I help people focus on the profit and the cash flow because that's totally different than your sales. When we focus on even the profit, when they look at, oh my gosh, my income statement, my profit and loss, says I have like $60,000. I don't have $60,000. I said, yeah, that's a fictitious number. That doesn't exist anywhere but on the sheet. It's not in your pocket. It's not in your bank. Why? Cash flow is different. Typically, right. There's debt service involved. And I was dealing with this. I looked at him. I said, great. Okay. You did make $1 million in sales. However, do you realize that it cost you almost $2 million to make those sales? Mm-hmm. You would have made more money going to the beach and doing nothing. And he's like, what are you talking about? No, no, no. I said, let's break it down. And we worked and we saw all the expenses that came into creating his product. And then all the debt service that went to that, because he had taken out loans to buy the equipment to do this. I said, your profit and loss isn't showing you your debt service and all the money going out to pay that money back. And all the money that you're taking, because you haven't put yourself on payroll, so you're taking money, which you have a right to. It's your business. You didn't get into it to not make money. You're taking money to pay for your home expenses. Like, you need a paycheck. And not everybody puts themselves on payroll. They just take an owner's draw. Sure. That's allowed. However, that's not on your profit and loss. Mm-hmm. So you're not seeing, now you're looking at profit. You're not looking at true cash flow. And we need to grow your cash flow. We need to increase your profit. We need to maximize those deductions so that you keep more of your hard-earned money and not let it drift away to Uncle Sam. You know, let's make it so you keep earn more, profit more, keep more.
I love it. That's a great message. And again, I know I've been down that road before. And so every opportunity I get to talk to somebody that wants to talk about the F word, as you referred to it, it's always a great opportunity because whether it's at home or into business, you can never, I always feel that way. Even though I know I'm good on it, I've got those days of the week that I'm reviewing, I still feel that it's never enough time put into it, you know, or especially like, I'll give you the example. When there's a surge of business, you know, towards the end of the year in my business, my day-to-day business, which is a marketing agency, towards the end of the year, there's a surge of new clients because everyone wants to grow the following year. So that typically happens. So, well, with a bunch of new clients, you know, you have to have the right staff. So generally speaking, I have to prepare to hire new staff. So there's this sort of like uncertainty where, okay, am I going to need five new bodies, warm bodies here to service these new accounts? And you start to try to do that forecasting, and you don't always get it right. No. And so at this time of the year, for me, I try to spend more time on the finances, as painful as it might be, because I need to be able to start out the year right, depending on when your fiscal year is. But nevertheless, I just think going back to your story about the client that focuses on sale, that was me for a long time too, Krista, just focusing on sales. I can grow sales. Let's hit a million, 2 million, 5 million. But then if you're still not having that, the profit that you thought you were going to have, maybe there's an issue with cash flow, whatever the case is, maybe liabilities, right? So if you take on some clients that may bring more liabilities, that might not work. Or how about now if you have to get new staff, maybe they're not going to work out long-term. You've got to train them. I mean, there are so many variables as to whether you'll make a profit or not in terms of a small business, right? For larger businesses, it's a little bit different. But even then, I mean, look, you see Smile Direct Club, a company that was doing hundreds of millions of dollars, went out of business overnight. Yeah. And we've seen others go out of business. And you start to think to yourself, well, if their product is still on demand, and I give those examples, Krista, here on the podcast, just it's more of like an inspirational story for the entrepreneurs to say that it, even if you don't have the same funding as your like biggest competitor, even if you don't have an army of people and your company's not publicly traded, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can still compete. And those companies have the same type of risk that you do of going out of business, and which is why we see companies go out of business all the time, no matter how big they are. And oftentimes, when you go dig into it years later, like companies like Sports Authority, Toys R Us, Sears, it kind of comes back to finances. The finances were being mismanaged in such a huge fashion. So it can happen to anyone, even when you have experts on staff, is the point.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, 82% of businesses fail due to cash flow, poor right. management of cash flow. When I tell people, you know, I like to all my clients, the people that I work with, we dig in October. We okay. dig in October because this is when you can strategize. If you haven't paid attention to your finances, you don't know how much, and I just did this with one of my restaurants. It's a pizza company. He didn't know how much to charge for his pizzas. And I showed him, I said, look at how much, especially after the pandemic, food costs have gone through the roof. I said, you're losing money on every pizza you sell. You're digging deeper in the hole because mm-hmm. you haven't adjusted your prices. He goes, oh, but people can't afford it. I said, well, you're not going to be in business if you don't adjust your prices, because you're losing every day. You're losing money. You're getting
absolutely.
Deeper.
I agree with you.
Don't adjust because, you know, you got to stay in business. So if you don't know what your finances are, how do you know what to charge? How do you know how much you can take home? How do you know, okay, I just did this with somebody. They put me off a little bit, but I finally met with them last week. And I said, hey, look at your profit this year compared to last year. I said, this is roughly estimated taxes, what you're going to owe. Let's be strategic. Are you good with that? Do you want to give bonuses? You know, because wouldn't you rather give it to your employees or to yourself as opposed to the government? Or is there something you needed to buy for your company that you'd maybe buy in February, March that you can buy now, get the deduction now to reduce your profit because you were going to spend it anyway. So why not invest it in the company versus giving it away to taxes?
Absolutely.
Be strategic, but only if you keep up and you know where you stand. And if you don't want to do it yourself, definitely hire someone who will do it for you and then meet with you. Not just say, don't worry about it, I got it covered, but hey, this is where you stand. Compared to last year, you've gone down. How come? Or if you have a seasonal business, knowing that, okay, especially for the poor, this summer was terrible for a lot of the seasonal businesses because of how much rain we had. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they were able to save enough money from prior years that carried them through. Or they're ready to, you know, knowing the lulls in your business that happen, and a lot of restaurants, their lulls are February and March. Mm-hmm. It's very quiet. They need to make more money to carry them through those quiet times. But how do you know that if you're not tracking it? None of us would want experts, right?
I agree.
The more you focus on something, the more you get of it.
Absolutely. I think it's really important to have someone on the team that's out from, you know, unbiased outside of your company. Because if you're a small, really small business, right? I call them micro business. It's so funny. The SBA, we talk about it here on the podcast. Everybody's got a different definition. But at the end of the day, we know that most small businesses are solopreneurs. It's one person, they contract different people, but they're the only employee, right? And so that's most businesses. And for me, I have found it immensely beneficial in the last 20 years to have business coaches, financial consultants, CPAs, bookkeepers, you know, mastermind groups where you could have that person who's unbiased to give you tough love and say, hey, you're trying to do this, but this is not going to work, right? And so my recommendation here too, Chris, is why we wanted to have you, is for those out there who are in their own little echo chamber and they're doing everything, wearing all the hats. To me, you know, great marketing is important, sales is important, no doubt, but you cannot underestimate the value of having someone who's looking at your numbers like your competitors who have full-time experts like CFOs in place. So you don't have the budget, maybe if you're a solopreneur, small business, to have a CFO.
Right.
That's okay. But hire someone like you who can come in and work with them and coach them and care about their business, understand their business model, and then get them to a place where they care about it enough. And so to me, super important. Now, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
So I am on social media, Facebook group, Facebook and Instagram, embookkeeping.com.
Okay.
And I also have my website, embookkeeping.com, where you can schedule a strategy call with me. Not everybody needs a bookkeeper and hires me to do their books. And I'm great with that. I train people because a lot of people use QuickBooks incorrectly and make a mess. I train people to do QuickBooks themselves and not need me. I train people to be able to understand their financials so that they are there. A lot of people that I work with, they'll check in with me 2 or 3 times a year. We have accountability meetings. Some people are monthly, some people are quarterly. And that's okay. Because if you're a solopreneur, you don't always have the funds or the cash flow. That's not where you want to spend it, is on some, you know, you need it in your business. So I create something that will fit you, what your needs are, what your budget can afford. And if that's twice a year, that's twice a year. If it's training, it's training. If it's, hey, just take it all because I'd rather go to the dentist, it's that as well. And it is everything in between. So you can schedule a strategy call with me. You'll walk away with your next steps. Someone walked away yesterday with, hey, you actually need to be the primary admin of your books, right? Mm-hmm. QuickBooks Online, their accountant was the primary admin. They had no access to their books.
Yeah, super important.
That's your first step. You need to have access to your books. So it wasn't even, hey, hire me for this. No, these are your next steps to put you in control, taking control of your money. No one ever regretted taking control of their money. You'll never hear someone say, I'm sorry I did that.
That's right. You know,
it's so empowering to be able to say, this is my money. These are my books. I know where it went. And I know how to do this. I have an accountant to English dictionary because sometimes accountants speak this foreign language and we go, what? And you know, if I have that as a freebie, I can send you the link for that so that people can say, all right, now I understand what the accountant's asking for and needs, because I didn't know when I started.
Sure.
So it's all those things. And now I have a daughter. My oldest is a CPA now. And I told her not to forget her roots and not to speak that foreign language to her. but you know, to create that understanding so that we don't feel stupid. I think that's the reason most people don't dive in, is they feel inadequate. They feel like they don't know. And guess what? It's not that you're not good at it. You just haven't been taught. And I would love to be able to empower you to be able to take that control and you know, be able to get on that road to financial freedom, where you're setting up not just a job for yourself, but a business that will take care of you and your family going forward. That's the whole reason we started it.
Perfect. Well, Krista, thank you for sharing your story. It was very inspiring. And also, you know, how you got from there to now helping businesses do accounting. It, to me, makes absolute sense why you're so passionate about it. And we really appreciate you being on a podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, here's to just growing your cash flow. That's the name of the game.